Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Maybe sometimes you rightfully slowed me down because my instincts are to keep doing things. And maybe sometimes we were able to find ways to get things done for people. But always those ways were lawful. Always those ways were done in consultation with lawyers. And with all due respect to the prosecutor, Mr. Ellis, always the means were legal. And in most cases, the ends were moral.
Born through a party in the county jail.
It is the Savage Nation. We have a systemic meltdown. We have a systemic meltdown. Both government and the media are so corrupt that I am going to call today for an anti-corruption minister who is appointed directly by the people and who reports only to the people. Now, of course, this is not going to happen because the gangsters who are running the country are never going to permit the people to elect an anti-corruption minister. I want to remind you what happened in Sicily after decades of being controlled by organized crime. The people themselves started marching in the streets until eventually the government itself fell, until eventually the government produced an anti-corruption minister in Sicily to take on both organized crime and organized corruption within the government. The fact of the matter is we are probably more corrupt than Sicily, only we don't know it. And that is because we have a corrupt media that is owned by the government. It is the government media complex. For example, the Republicans oppose this obscene, this pornographic spending bill by Obama and his minions. They oppose it, rightly so, because it's nothing more than pork barrel spending to pay back the people who elected this upstart interloper Obama. The fact of the matter is the Republicans were right to stand up to him. Yet the vermin in the media, the vermin on CNN in particular, have the nerve to say Republicans stiffed the president. Republicans oppose the president. No, you schmucks, it's the people who oppose corruption. But there's the media, the government media complex. Now, I'm going to go into the corruption today in the government. You don't have to go any further than the appointment of a tax dodger, a man who dodged taxes until he paid his taxes, in order to take the job as Treasury Secretary, which, by the way, also makes him, I think, the head of the Internal Revenue Service. So if you get done for back taxes, the man who is dunning you is a criminal himself, who has, of course, not gone to jail, but he's a tax dodger nevertheless. We all know about Rod Blagojevich, which, you know, you could say is humorous. You could say the Rod Blagojevich thing is comic and humorous, and you could enjoy this guy's shenanigans and his campy kind of appearances, but it's not humorous. Either the guy's crazy or he thinks that the world is as corrupt outside of Chicago and the people are as naive outside of Chicago as they were to have elected him. The fact of the matter is Blagojevich is really not unique. Blagojevich is a symptom. He is not the problem itself. Blagojevich is how politics works. Only he was so brazen that he got caught. And so we're going to talk about him, Geithner the grifter. By the way, Geithner, the Treasury Secretary, who was shoot in by the phony Republicans, I don't think you understand this. His second in command was hired yesterday. He happens to be a lobbyist for Goldman Sachs. I told you 4 months ago, this is a government of Goldman Sachs, by Goldman Sachs, and for Goldman Sachs. Please explain to me how it's possible that an investment bank could be running the United States of America. Now, if they were doing a wonderful job, I wouldn't be commenting. But they're not doing a wonderful job. They're doing a wonderful job of destroying America's economy. And so, therefore, ladies and gentlemen, when we know that the new Treasury Secretary is a tax fraud, and we find out in the last 24 hours that he got a huge severance package of over $500,000 from his last job as the head of the Federal Bank in New York City, and that he just hired a Goldman Sachs lobbyist as his second in command at the Treasury Department, I'm telling you that Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich is not the problem. He is a symptom of the problem. It's all tied into the stimulus plan. We are living in a new era of gangsterism. The phone number here is 1-800-449-8255. Are there any liberals out there, or let us put, I wouldn't say liberals, because I think the liberals are incapable of thought and are incapable of change. They're diehards, and they will never acknowledge that they made a mistake. They're also very thin-skinned. Are there any swing voters out there who have voters' remorse? I'd like to hear from you if you swung over to vote for Obama because you believe with hope and you believed in change, and you found out they were just hoping that you'd be naive enough to vote for this interloper fraud, whose first act is to make nice to the terrorist at Guantanamo, and then he appears on Jihad TV out of Dubai to tell them that he really loves the Muslim world, but he's not so sure about the American world. You see, the fundamental rules of our society seem to be broken. They're broken in the financial world. They're broken in the Wall Street. It seems that Wall Street broke all the rules, paid off all the regulators. For example, where's the SEC? They built billions and billions from investors, by the way, who were only slightly less greedy than they were. And as a result, they seem to have succeeded in destroying the U.S. economy. In the political world, we know about Blagojevich. What did Blagojevich actually do? Well, we'll go into that today. But he's not the only lawbreaker in the political world. The new Treasury Secretary, Timothy Geithner, who, by the way, should be impeached before he starts, did not see fit to pay his taxes until he was nominated for the position he currently holds under Barack Hussein Obama, who appointed this crook. Our current Attorney General, Eric Holder, far-left radical, worked with Bill Clinton to let millionaire lawbreaker and Clinton campaign contributor Mark Rich go free. So you see, it's a new era in Washington, just like the new era we've seen on Wall Street. It's a new era of criminality, a new era of corruption, a new era of financial disaster. And the worst part of it is we do not have an anti-corruption minister to investigate all of this and to put things right again. You know, during the Prohibition era of the 1920s, there were corrupt leaders. There were paid-off officials, the Al Capone period, and there were gangsters. But it's no different today. But in that era, at least, there was an Elliot Ness. At least in that era, there were the untouchables. In this day and age, in this era, all of our leaders seem to be touchable by corruption. 1-800-449-8255. Michael Savage, the least known, biggest name in talk radio, the least known, biggest name in the media, the least known, most revered man in the United States media, Michael Savage, who was awarded today the prestigious Braveheart Award. That's right. The prestigious Braveheart Award was granted to Michael Savage, writer and radio commentator, best-selling author at that. The award is indicative of the nature of Savage, who was outspoken, tenacious, and bold, says the awardee. I am the awardee or the awarder. You'll have to wait and see. This is the Savage Nation. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Let's begin in New York City. Jim, WOR, go ahead, please.
Hey, Michael, good evening, and how are you? Talking about the anti-corruption officer, I think in order for that guy, which would be a great idea if it could really ever happen, which I doubt, he would have to have more power than the Supreme Court, because he would have to be able to override the Supreme Court, because the biggest corruption artist is Barry himself, who doesn't want to even show a valid proof that he's constitutionally eligible to be our president. And he can't show it. He doesn't want to show it because he can't show it. And they don't want to hear it in the Supreme Court.
Well, you know, let's put aside this issue of his not being a citizen, because he's already won on that, as he's won on everything, because he has a complicit media who care not about the means, but only the ends to the means. And the ends to the means, the ends, as you well know, are very, very clear. That is going nice on terrorists. I can go down the litany and the list of what Obama hopes to achieve and what he's done already in 8 days and the damage he's done to this country with his lies about openness when he's the most closed president by all evidence in advance. The man is the most closed, has the most closed administration in history. He said he would lay out exactly where the bailout money went into which banks. Remember, Bush wouldn't divulge this. Remember, Bloomberg News sued Bush, the Bush administration. They wouldn't divulge where the $300 billion went. Well, guess what? Obama said, when I'm elected, I will. He lied. You know, liar, liar, pants on fire. Stop being so nice to him just because you're afraid of being called a racist. I don't care what his skin color is. If the guy's a liar, he's a liar. And he's a liar. Period. End of story. We need an anti-corruption minister right now. I'll be right back. Savage.
I felt it a moral obligation to try to help those families keep their health care and still be able to go to the doctor. And then I chose a way, through legal advice and agency directors, to protect those families and keep them from losing their health care. Now, how is it an impeachable offense to protect low-income parents from losing their health care?
I couldn't sleep at all last night.
So we see the impeachment of Blagojevich, and that's an easy one. You know, the only people who are on his side are the folks at Fox News, such as the disgraced guy with the mustache, whose name I forget, Jerry Rivers. He was always a laughing stock, going back to when he was a streetwalker in New York, you know, streetwalker on Channel 5 with the camera. And Neil Cavuto, who's a clueless, basically Lou Costello type. Basically does whatever the, you know, is a sock puppet for the power structure. They actually defended Blagojevich the other day. I never saw anything like this. They went along with the victimhood of Blagojevich, Neil Cavuto and Jerry Rivers. I couldn't believe what I was watching. I could not believe it. But that's these are marginal issues. I mean, I'm a watcher of the media and I'm a member of the media. People criticize me, so I feel free to criticize anyone I want. That's what a commentator does. They comment. We are paid to comment. And since we comment better than you do, and since we comment more intelligently, more sharply, more poignantly than you do, we make a lot of money doing it and you don't. You can write blogs that nobody reads. You could try to get a job at a newspaper, which nobody reads. But the fact of the matter is we in talk radio are the kings of the opposition. And there's a good reason that Rush is being attacked by Obama, and that is because he would like to be a dictator. Since there is no Republican voice per se, to stand up to this man and the juggernaut of liberalism that has seized the day, by all means necessary, incidentally, and I'm using some charged statements here, since there is no Republican figure to stand up to him, the number one lightning rod would be Rush Limbaugh, since he has the largest audience in talk radio. Now, for years, I've called Rush the a bag man for the Republican Party. You know I've criticized him. And he has been. He admitted he was a water boy for George Bush for many years. It was only toward the end when he saw that Bush was so bad that even he had to, you know, disengage from that train. But, you know, lately Rush is actually doing a good job. He's standing up for himself, and I think he's flying the flag of conservatism very well. The fact of the matter is the reason that a standing president has attacked a talk show host is because we in talk radio on the conservative side of the dial are in fact the only opposition to this would-be dictator, Barack Hussein Obama, who, by the way, denied he had any Muslim roots before the election. If you remember, anybody who said he was a Muslim was called a racist and crazy by the vermin in the media. Anyone who used the name Hussein before the election was called a racist and insane by the vermin in the media. But on the day that he was inaugurated, he used the name Barack Hussein Obama. The first thing he did was make nice to the terrorists at Guantanamo. And then he went and he appeared on Jihad TV. I got up at 4 o'clock in the morning last night. I can't sleep for the last few days. I am terrified that Obama is a would-be dictator. Now, I heard all sorts of conspiracies before the election, most of which I wrote off as conspiracies. I'm not going to repeat any of them here. I'm starting to get a chill up my spine that it's worse than even I fear. And I'm asking you, if you were a swing voter who hated Bush so much, who hated the Republicans so much, even though you're a conservative, that you went over to the other side and you voted for this sham, this fraud, this shill for some other forces. Because make no mistake about it, all you got to do is look at his appointments and you'll see who's really running the country. It's the same old corrupt Democrat machine as was in power under the Clintons, with a few new members who are possibly more corrupt than they were. Now, I would think that people who have grandchildren who are Democrats would understand that they're bankrupting their children's future. But I've come to understand that they don't think about a future. They think only about winning and about stealing. And they think only about winning and stealing now. They don't care about tomorrow. The country never enters their mind. And that's what politics means. You know, last week on Friday night, I went to the museum. One of the museums here is open on Friday nights, which I like a lot. Other than the screaming children, you know, doing art, they have to do it, I suppose. But to me, a museum has always been a place of refuge, not a sort of a ding-dong school. But everything's Spock-like today. But I know where to go to get away from the screaming brats with the watercolors downstairs. I went to the Oceanic exhibit, you know, the primitive art from New Guinea, New Ireland, New Britain, which I have a small collection of and I've collected for years. And I love looking at these, you know, primitive art objects. And then I go over to the room with the more formal European paintings. And one of them, and I'm sorry I don't remember the name of the artist, is a painting of early America, colonial, post-colonial days. And it shows two guys in overalls in a country farmhouse, or almost like a general store, sitting around. And then there's a big fat guy with a pot belly sitting on a barrel next to a stove. And the title of the painting is called The Politician. And the rubes, of course, were the honest American farmers. There were two of them in the painting. And the crook was the fat politician. And I got to tell you something. The person I went to the museum with has been saying to me, Michael, it's always been this way. The word politician means liar. The word politician means people who bamboozle the average person. So I said to her, wait a minute. Are you telling me that things have always been this way? She said, no. It's far worse now, but the politicians are exactly the same as they've always been. After bankrupting America, they now want the taxpayer to pay them back for bankrupting America. After promising hope, they said they would give you change, when in fact the hope was you'd be foolish enough to elect this sleight-of-hand artist called Obama.
Savage.
My children's school was canceled today because of what?
Some ice.
Why don't you say you're canceling the global warming hysteria bill that you're trying to push down our throats? Turn it off. Turn it off. It's all rubbish. 1-800-449-8255. We got all of this to talk about. I have a list of the highlights of the so-called stimulus bill. And let me explain what's so evil and corrupt about this bill. Let me explain it to you. Normally, when a new administration comes along, they take a long period of time to put together their first spending bill. And it's hotly debated, back and forth, a lot of give and take. What Obama and his minions are trying to do is jam a gargantuan several trillion-dollar bill down the throats of the American people in order to get it through under the guise of saving the economy. What he's really doing is paying back his supporters. There's also about 30% of pork. And I'm going to read you some of the things we have found in the stimulus bill that should make you think very carefully about it. Los Angeles, KGIL, Florita, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi there. I'm one of those thin-skinned liberals you were talking about earlier. And I just wanted to ask you a question in terms of Obama's not having been in office 30 days yet. I think... you know, you're neglecting the fact that it was Bush and his regime that got us in this position.
No, I guess you're a new listener because I've been the most ardent critic of Bush for many years, so you don't understand that because you probably never heard the show before. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's absolutely correct.
All right. Well, then you don't know who I am. You're talking to an independent, not to a Republican. Does that help you at all?
Hello?
What do you mean, hello? I just told you something. You didn't hear me? You went deaf already? What's the matter? The government didn't send you your latest hearing aid? What, Obama didn't send you the other hearing aid? You didn't like what you heard, so you didn't hear all of a sudden? What, the government didn't send you the second hearing aid? What, are you behind on your Medicaid payments?
A nut, aren't you?
Yeah, all right, take a walk. Probably another million paid for by Acorn. Yeah, of course Bush made this mess, along with Barney Frank and the Democrats. There was a joint conspiracy to destroy the economy, or let us say joint mishandling of the economy, which destroyed the economic system. So let me ask you something. You fixed that by making it worse? You know, the way I understand the meltdown of an economic meltdown is you cut spending. That's the first thing you do. You cut spending everywhere you can. You don't increase spending. The times in my life that I have had things happen to me that were not in my control, such as the racism of putting unqualified minorities ahead of me in jobs, the racism and sexism of putting unqualified women ahead of me in jobs and university positions, when I was forced away from my own birthright by the racism of this government going back many years now, what I had to do was cut spending. Of course I would have liked a new car, but I drove an old Volvo so I could send my children to elementary school. Of course I would have liked new clothing and a vacation, but I couldn't afford it. I had to keep my children clothed, all because of the racism of the U.S. government by attacking me, a white male, through affirmative action. So as I say to you, when a country goes broke, what it has to do is cut back on expenditures first, not greatly increase expenditures. And that is why I say you can blame Bush all you want, and you'd be right. But you don't make matters better by making them worse. So let's look at the actual stimulus bill, all of you out there who haven't looked at it, because you don't even know what's in the bill. I mean, I could, you know what, I'd rather direct you to michaelsavage.com. I don't want to read it. It's boring. By the way, there's $200 million to fix up the National Mall in the District of Columbia. Why do you suppose the National Mall needs to be fixed up and resodded? Because the Obamaites trashed the National Mall, and the media is not showing you how they left the National Mall looking like an inner-city slum. Now, of course, that's not saying the black people did that. Many of you will jump to that conclusion, because most of the people there were white. They were the white trash who put him in office, as you well know, the uneducated white trash along with the Hollywood dictators. By the way, 600 private jets flew in for the inauguration of Obama. Did you know that? Did you know that 600 private jets flew into the Washington, D.C. area to see the inauguration of this wonderful man of the people? Did you know that? How's that for carbon credits, global warming, et cetera, blah, blah, blah? You didn't know any of that. Why? Because the vermin in the media won't report it to you. Because you are living in the equivalent of the ex-Soviet Union, where only the government-controlled news gets out. They called it in the Soviet Union Izvestia or Pravda, the truth. We call it ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN, and Fox News. It's one conglomerate. It doesn't matter what the initials are. It's all part and parcel of the government media complex, in my humble opinion. I am an independent. Make no mistake about it. I'm not a Republican. I have not been registered as a Republican. I've been an independent on radio for 15 years, long before people like the bartender try to steal that moniker. But let them steal all they want. Now, I see that the anointed one, the fraud, Obama the Magnificent, was just putting on a set-piece stage play with the new appointee to be Treasury Secretary, whose name is Geithner. Now, why he would sit next to a tax cheat, I have no idea. Does he think we have faith in a tax cheat? Does he think that we are that gullible that we think that a man who cheated on his own taxes is entitled to run the IRS? I doubt it. There's an article that came out from Cliff Kincaid, Accuracy in Media, that's really telling. And it's the top story on michaelsavage.com, why CNBC is promoting or promoted confirmation of tax cheat Geithner. It's a very interesting story. And you have to understand why they quickly confirmed Timothy Geithner, who he is, and why CNBC promoted the confirmation of this tax cheat. Now, Geithner, by the way, not only got caught cheating on his taxes, he was accused of lying about his cheating during his confirmation hearing when he attempted to blame the problem on his TurboTax computer software program, which I won't go into here. But let me go into something very important right now. In a major conflict of interest, we learn, General Electric's media properties, which include NBC, CNBC, NBC News, and MSLGBT, which used to be known as MSNBC. It's now Microsoft Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Transgestite. Transgestite Network, MSLGBT, Microsoft Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Transvestite Network, are all owned by General Electric's media property conglomerate, and you may not know this, but General Electric is indirectly benefiting from the Wall Street bailout. Did you know this? Through a federal loan guarantee of $139 billion that was extended to GE Capital, the lending arm of GE. I'll go further. The chairman of General Electric, Jeffrey Immelt, is a member of the New York Federal Reserve, headed by Timothy Geithner when he was the head of the Federal Reserve. In fact, Immelt, the head of GE, may be involved in finding a successor to Geithner as president of the New York Federal Reserve Bank. Now, when GE Capital got its federal loan guarantee, the story was covered on CNBC by reporter Steve Leisman, and we'll direct you to the article from the World Tribune on michaelsavage.com. What's interesting is one of CNBC's most famous and outspoken talking heads, Jim Cramer, who I like very much, by the way, did an amazing turnaround. At first, he opposed Geithner. He then supported him. He said, I've given up fighting this. Obama loves him. Cramer said that the guy got a free pass, and everybody on Wall Street, all my buddies who lost billions for you, for the American people, told me, Jim, he's the greatest. He then went on to say, well, now everybody has discovered the truth, he added, alluding to the tax cheating. Cramer said that if he had committed similar offenses, he would be going to jail. Did you hear this? Did you hear what I'm saying to you? That only four members joined with Grassley in voting against Geithner? These are the last good men in the Senate. Kyle of Arizona, Jim Bunning of Kentucky, Pat Roberts of Kansas, and Michael Bienzi of Wyoming. Did you know any of this? No, you don't know any of this. Well, now you know the rest of the story here on the Savage Nation. You've learned exactly why CNBC put out the talking points to appoint Geithner. These talking points were originally prepared by the Obama Transition Office and distributed to Capitol Hill, K Street, and congressional reporters. The talking points were designed to portray Geithner's problems as, quote, simple mistakes or oversights. It's all a lie. Total and absolutely a lie. But at least you've learned through the work of Cliff Kincaid why CNBC promoted the confirmation of a tax cheat like Geithner. You learned exactly why. It's because Immelt, the chairman of General Electric, who I respected until this moment, but I don't anymore, received a federal loan guarantee of $139 billion extended to GE Capital, the lending arm of GE. And now you know what's wrong with the stimulus bill. Now you understand how politics is done. If you want to live in a country where you can buy and you can buy and you can buy and you can corrupt and you can corrupt and you can corrupt, you're not going to have a country left. I don't think we do anyway. As a matter of fact, it's gotten so bad that the most questionable American I have ever read about, George Soros, is now one of Obama's top economic advisors. And George Soros is recommending some drastic measures that will forever turn America into something other than what it is. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Lon, and he says Johnny Johnson's good for it.
Okay.
He's going to give you, no, he didn't get it, but he's, you know, I'm good for it. I got to just decide what accounts to get it out of. And Lon's going to talk to you about some sensitivities legislatively tonight when he sees you with regard to timing of all of this.
Right, before the end of the year, though, right?
Oh, yeah. So there was no waffling there. It's just that, you know, we just got to figure it out, and so he'll give you the specific details.
Well, good. He's going to be there tonight, right?
He's going with you. It's a basketball game?
Yeah, with
the... He knew it was United Center. Wasn't sure what the venue was, but good.
Okay, so... But
all right, now you're listening to a lobbyist. That's the voice of a lobbyist on a tapped phone call speaking with Blagojevich about getting some money done to him, over to him from somebody before the end of the year, and Blago saying good and this and that. And many of you are so naive that you've taken hook, line, and sinker the line put out by Blago that he really didn't commit any crime. This was picked up by the fool, Neil Cavuto, picked up by the disgraced mustachio who gave away troop movements during the Iraq War, whose name, Jerry Rivers. The fact of the matter is, it is a crime. Conspiracy is a crime. When they got, who was the gangster who died of cancer in prison, the Don, the Teflon Don, I forget his name. When John Gotti was caught on tape saying, you know, he kept getting away with it till they caught him on tape, the FBI finally caught him saying, I'll cut this guy's you-know-what off, I'll do this to him, I'll kill him. He didn't actually cut the guy's you-know-what off. He didn't actually kill the guy. He just said he would do it. That's a crime. I don't think you understand this because you are so brainwashed today by the American media. Even those of you who listen to Fox News don't even understand that Neil Cavuto is part of the same team, the government media complex. For them to take the side of Blagojevich is astounding to me. But anyway, again, that's not the big issue. It is a conspiracy. It's a conspiracy when you try to get something done illegally, whether you do it or not. Don't you understand that, that's how it works? Now, Obama just did a stage play for the media where he's called the Wall Street bonuses outrageous. Of course, it's BS. He's a crook like the rest of them in the sense that he's trying to rob the American taxpayer of at least $1 trillion or $2 trillion. But he now comes up with a set piece for you fools where he sits grimacing with the tax dodger, Timothy Geithner, sitting next to him, saying that the bonuses received by Wall Street executives last year were shameful. And Obama said he's going to tell financial executives they need to show restraint. What's laughable here is that the man he was sitting next to, Timothy Geithner, received over $500,000 in bonuses after he resigned his position with the Federal Reserve Bank to take a job with Obama. So Obama goes on to say, that is the height of irresponsibility that the bankers had given themselves $20 billion worth of bonuses despite the economic meltdown last fall. But he's sitting next to Geithner, the new Treasury Secretary, who just got $500,000 bonus from the Federal Reserve Bank. And, of course, you won't know that because the empty skirts and the empty suits, the talkers on television understand how to finagle you. So he says that's shameful. Mr. Obama, shameful is the bailout bill that gives money to illegal aliens. Mr. Obama, you know what shameful is? Shameful is appointing someone who pays no taxes until he gets caught. Shameful is giving money to the criminals in Acorn. Shameful is appointing a tax cheat to the head of the Treasury Department. Shameful, Mr. Obama, is breaking your own rules against hiring lobbyists 2 days after you made the rules. Shameful is closing Gitmo with no idea what to do with the killers in it. Shameful, Mr. Obama, is spending $150 million on your coronation. Shameful is the way you're running the government as though it's a dictatorship, by the way, Mr. Obama. But most shameful of all is that the American people were so gullible they would elect you as president. That's what shameful is, Mr. Obama, in my answer. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. Let me take your calls right here on the Savage Nation. San Diego, Mark, go ahead, please.
Let's talk about the Bilderberg Group. You're talking about conspiracies to bankrupt the economy. What can you tell the audience about the Bilderberg Group, and why isn't that mentioned ever in any mainstream?
Well, that's like talking about the Council on Foreign Relations. It's too esoteric for the audience. I don't think we have to go any further than Obama, Geithner, Nancy Pelosi, and Dianne Feinstein and Hillary Clinton. Is that enough for you? We don't need a Bilderberg Group. We have the Democrat Socialist Group that I just mentioned.
Every year the Bilderberg group meets in secret, and Obama...
We know this. We understand it, but I don't want to talk about some esoteric group called the Bilderberg Group. What we have is a Democrat Socialist Group run by Obama, Nancy Pelosi, Hillary Clinton, Dianne Feinstein, and the others. What do we have to look at the Bilderberg Group for?
Because it's not only Democrat, it's Republican as well. It's they understand they operate both sides of the coin, Michael. And you're keeping your audience in the dark. I think you're doing everybody a tremendous disservice.
Don't tell me what I'm doing. Get your own talk show if you want to do them a service. What good is going to come of talking about the Bilderberg Group, which I've heard since 1990? Tell me what good's going to come of it.
Well, why don't we expose them? Maybe they're violating the
law. What needs to be exposed is Obama's hypocrisy so that the idiots finally get it and stop him before he does more damage. That's what needs to be done. Not talking about some esoteric conspiracy group. Thanks for the call. You're 100% wrong. New York City, WOR. Gloria, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Michael, I am a conservative that is filled to the brim with remorse because I voted Democrat out of disgust with Bush and the fact that I felt...
Well, you were led to do this by false prophets within the conservative media who said, don't vote for McCain because McCain is only going to be a Bush 3. But if you remember, I was saying that right up until about a month before the election when I said, I have to support McCain. Do you remember remorsefully, I have to support him? That a vote against McCain is a vote for a road to you know where, an immediate road to you know where, as opposed to a slow road to you know where.
And I am filled with terror now because I look at the situation and personally...
I knew about McCain. On one issue I knew McCain I could trust, and that was national security. I knew that McCain was a true American. I cannot say that about Obama. Can you?
Absolutely not.
Do you to this day actually feel that by going on Arabic TV, by going on Jihad TV, Obama sent the signal that he's a man of peace who loves America? Or is he a man of something else who loves some other place first? Does Obama reflect America first or something else? Or does he reflect Arabia first?
Definitely not America first.
That's why did Obama not use Hussein until he was sworn in? Explain that to me.
Yep, I know. It's like you couldn't say Hussein the whole time and everything else. And, you know, it's just...
Well, you remember about 3 months ago I started to say that Obama's name is BHO and that every president in history, LBJ, FDR, they all were denoted by their initials. You remember that show? I don't know if you were listening that day.
Yes, I'm a faithful listener. I listen every day.
All right, so I said, well, they're going to have trouble if Obama wins, because if they won't refer to his middle name, Hussein, then they have to refer to his first and last name, which is Barack Obama, which means the media is going to have to denote him by his initials B.O., which, of course, they won't do because it reflects something else in the American jargon. So they're stuck. And then all of a sudden, I think it was the New York Post came up with some crazy designation called BAM. And for the life of me, I don't understand what BAM has to do with Barack Hussein Obama. It was LBJ, FDR, JFK, GWB. Remember that? Now suddenly it's BAM, BAM. That's because they were hiding the Hussein. So why don't they just call him what he is, BHO?
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
The Savage Nation. I feel as though I'm living in a banana republic. Welcome to the Savage Nation. Now, as you well know, I am not a fan of socialism. I'm also not a fan of frauds. I'm not a fan of corruption. And I have called for the creation of an anti-corruption minister in the United States of America, something along the lines of what is done in many European countries. But we will not get an anti-corruption minister, because those who would do this for us are the people who need to be investigated by the anti-corruption minister. I am focusing right now on Obama's lies. Obama today had the nerve to get up and calling Wall Street bonuses outrageous in a phony game with the media, of course, projecting the image of a reformist, a reform-minded president who was just shocked, really shocked, by the large bonuses received by Wall Street executives last year. He says, shameful! That that is the height of irresponsibility, said Obama, after learning the Wall Street bankers had given themselves $20 billion worth in bonuses despite the economic meltdown. He went on to say it was shameful. Now, Obama was sitting next to the newly appointed Treasury Secretary, Timothy Geithner, while he was giving the speech about the shame, blasting Wall Street for receiving large bonuses. What you don't know, because the vermin in the media don't want you to know it, is that newly minted Treasury Secretary, the boy sitting to Obama's right, got a $435,000 bonus or severance payment, you want to call it that, from his last employer, the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. I'll repeat the number, $435,000. In addition, the same man, the tax dodger, earned $411,000 as president of the New York Fed, and he got another $50,000 to $100,000 for unused vacation and comp time, according to a mandatory financial disclosure statement released by the Office of Government Ethics, which I am now reporting on the Savage Nation. Now, here is Obama trying to sell the $1 trillion stimulus package, pretending to be outraged at bonuses on Wall Street, while he is sitting next to Timothy Geithner, who himself received almost a $500,000 in a severance payment, which is not any different than a bonus. Does that bother you at all? There are some other small things that I think are quite telling. Remember, I'm a student of the small as well as the large. And what you're about to hear may seem to sound petty at this time, but in the long run, I can assure you it will come to be very prescient of me to have pointed this out. You haven't heard this anywhere. You're going to hear it in a moment. It's a very small thing, but I think it's going to be a very telling observation. While Obama was giving this outrage speech about the bonuses on Wall Street, he was sitting in the White House, in one of the rooms of the White House with Timothy Geithner, as I said. In the background was a fireplace for the White House, which I noticed has already smudged the mantle. The mantle has already been smudged. Already Obama has trashed one of the rooms of our White House with having started a fire. Either he started the fire or one of his minions started a fire without opening the flue. You say, well, it's a small thing. Yes, it's a small thing, but I think it's a telling thing. The mantle was smudged. That is something you never would have seen from a punctual, proper George Bush, who always appeared in a white a shirt and tie and always appeared in a suit and jacket. And I'm not a fan of George Bush. I was very skeptical of him going back to the year 2000. But you talk about a difference in administration, just pay attention to what I said to you. The fireplace mantle is already smudged. The man he is sitting next to is a tax cheat who's been appointed to be Treasury Secretary, and we're not supposed to notice both the smudge and the tax cheating. We're not supposed to notice the apparent conflict in his statement that he's shocked by the huge Wall Street bonuses while he is sitting next to a man who received a $500,000 bonus last year, and that's why I'm pointing out the fireplace to you here on the Savage Nation. If you care to comment on my comments, the phone number is 1-800-449-8255. I will take your calls now in order in which they have been holding on the tarmac. In San Francisco on the home station, KNEW, James, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Yes, Dr. Savage, what I'm hearing from you that really troubles me is this is beyond, you've gone beyond, way beyond sour grapes from just losing an election. And what you're saying is reactionary, it's slander, and it's un-American.
Okay, and, let's start with you. What did I say that's un-American?
Well, you're attacking President Obama before he's even had a chance. He won an election.
Hey, schmuck, listen to me. I'm not your weak father. I'm Michael Savage. Let me tell you like it is, schmuck. Obama has passed 5 executive orders. He's jammed through a $1 trillion spending bill. It doesn't matter whether it was done in 1 week or in 4 years. Don't tell me I have to wait 100 days. If I wait 100 days, there'll be no country left.
He's doing what he was elected to do. He has the.
He was not elected to rob the Treasury. Didn't this man say he would not appoint lobbyists? He said that 2 days ago.
The people are sick of not.
Wait a minute. Shut up. Shut your mouth. Do you understand that you are an idiot? You're the dupe that he wanted. You're the chinless wonders that elected him. This man said he wanted change. This man said there would be no lobbyists. Are you aware of the fact that he's appointed 3 major lobbyists to major positions?
If you want to investigate.
Why doesn't that bother you? Why doesn't that bother you?
To investigate Bush's war crimes, Savage.
Listen, you weakling, you. You chinless wonder, you. You're the kind of man who, if Obama said he wanted to put talk show hosts in gas chambers, you would say Sieg Heil. Isn't that correct? Tell me I'm wrong, James.
I wouldn't put you. I would definitely get you off the air, though. You have no place.
You would? You know what, my friend? Not only will you not get me off the air, my show has never been bigger. And it's going to get bigger and bigger. Do you know why? Because your man is a hypocrite. Your man is a fraud. And I am going to be not the last, but perhaps the first to continue this exposure of this fraud. And if you don't like it, my friend, you have a choice. You can go and read one of the failing newspapers in San Francisco. Have a nice day. So here's a man who says I'm un-American for pointing out the hypocrisy of Barack Hussein Obama. Here's a man who is taking the party line and saying, oh, give him 100 days. Give him a chance. Well, I don't think I have to wait 100 days, do you? The man passed 5 executive orders in less than a week or in about 8 days. The man is trying to trash us with a $1 trillion bill that your children's children will never get to pay back. No, my friends, I think I'm going to get even more strident, not less. What is shameful, my chinless friend from San Francisco, is the $1 trillion bailout bill. What is shameful, my friend, is a bailout bill that gives money to crooks, lobbyists, illegal aliens, Acorn, and people on welfare who pay no taxes. What is shameful, my chinless friend from San Francisco, is appointing a tax cheat to the post of Treasury Secretary. Shameful is breaking your own rules against hiring lobbyists 2 days after you make them, my chinless wonder. Shameful is closing Gitmo with no idea what to do with the killers in Gitmo. Shameful is spending $150 million on your coronation, my friend. And if you think I'm going to be silenced by chinless wonders like you, you got another guest coming. I'll be right back.
Well, she's the gal in the red blue jean. She's the queen of all the team. She's the woman that I know. She's the woman that loves me so. Say, Bebopalula, she's my baby.
So the talking points coming out of the White House produce guys like the chinless wonder who called me last segment and say, give him a chance, Mike. You're just full of sour grapes because he won. Give him 100 days, Mike. Give him a honeymoon. Well, I'm afraid that if I give him 100 days, there'll be 100 executive orders and there won't be America. So as I say, the time frame per se has no meaning whatsoever. Yeah, maybe in the past you gave a president 100 days, but I don't think you dopes out there understand that no president, there's not an example that I know of a president, at least in modern history, who passed as many executive orders in a shorter period of time. We are living in a putative dictatorship. And if we sit here 100 days for another 100 or 90 days more, and we let this guy have free reign, you're not going to have a democracy left. I'm warning you. Moreover, he's a hypocrite. He sits there and says, I'm shocked. I am just shocked at the large bonuses. Shocked at the bonuses on Wall Street. And sitting next to him is some schmoozy kind of schmecky guy named Geithner, who he made Treasury Secretary, who received a $500,000 severance pay, severance bonus last year, whatever you want to call it. Doesn't he understand that we see these things? Don't you get it? I do. Obama cranks up thermostat in White House, says New York Times. Now, I noticed that the fireplace mantle in our White House has already been smudged by the Obama team, which I don't understand why they couldn't have cleaned it before the press conference. It looked like he was in some shabby apartment somewhere in the Upper West Side rather than the White House, but they've trashed it already. There's smudge all over the mantle. I've seen it. I saw it. Don't tell me I didn't see it. The king has no clothes. They could have painted the mantle of the fireplace. But I think I have the explanation here. The New York Times says that he's from Hawaii, okay, says Obama's senior advisor, David Axelrod. He likes it warm. You could grow orchids in there. So although he's going to try and save us from all problems, including global warming, apparently he likes it hot and that he needs to have the thermostat turned up very high. As they say, some like it hot, and I guess that applies to the Obama presidency more so than others. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. And that's it. He shows up at the Oval Office shortly before 9 in the morning, roughly 2 hours later than his early-to-bed, early-to-rise predecessor. Obama likes to have his first workout, weights and cardio, in the morning. He reads several papers. He still reads papers? No wonder he thinks he can get away with this. See, that's the answer. He reads several papers, but most of America doesn't read any papers. That's why he thinks he's getting away with this, because they're not reporting on what I'm reporting on. That his Treasury Secretary Stooge got a bonus of $500,000, which they call a severance pay. Okay? They're not reporting that he hired lobbyists after saying 2 days ago he wouldn't hire lobbyists. Of course he reads newspapers, because the newspapers are being very complimentary of him. Well, then he packs his daughters to school. Yeah, I don't believe any of this. Eats dinner with his family, returns to work, blah, 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 blah. Wonderful. I'm glad he's such a sober worker. I'm sure Lenin was also. I'm sure Lenin was very committed to his desk when he seized power. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com, San Francisco. William, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hi. Michael. I'm from South Carolina. I just moved out here about a year ago, and liberalism is running me crazy. But I feel like you're not giving Obama a chance. He came into a messed up situation, and he'll probably leave out worse than what it was.
I guess, I don't know, again, is another one. Did Medicaid not send your hearing aid this month to batteries? Did you miss the entire last segment, or is Medicaid behind on the battery shipment for the hearing aid?
Nothing's wrong with my hearing, nor my eyes.
I just said in the last segment, sir, that the number of days he has been in office is irrelevant when he has passed 5 executive orders in approximately 6 days. He has jammed down the throats of the American people a $1 trillion spending bill. Doesn't that concern you? Is that not worthy of discussion?
Yeah, but, it was like that before he got there. Give him a break.
Again, what is it? Both batteries didn't arrive or only one, William?
I have.
Thank you for the call. I guess Medicaid is. See, this is why they need the stimulus bill. Because apparently many of the libs who listen to talk radio, their batteries have run out of juice, and they haven't shipped them out yet. Medicaid is behind on shipping hearing aid batteries. Houston, Texas, Brian, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, intelligent, rational socialism, if done right, can get us out of the hole.
All right. Now, what do you mean, Cuban-style socialism?
No. No violence, none of that. You take these people with like $58 billion, $60 billion. First of all, you don't need that much money. You know, we should have a cap. Nobody can have more than $30 million.
Why? Because you're the kind of man who could never have more than $30,000. I can tell by your approach to this that you're a man who'll never make more than probably, I don't think you'll save $5,000 in your life. Why should a man not have what he can earn? If he steals it, it's one thing, but if he earns it, why shouldn't he have what he earned?
Nobody needs $58 billion.
Well, who are you to tell somebody what they need? According to you, they don't need a new car. You could say they don't need a new car. They could drive an old car. But what if they like a new car?
Greed, if you get rid of the
greed. Well, what you say is greed is the other man's success. If a man works very hard and he makes a lot of money and he wants to buy a boat and the boat is bigger than your boat, does that mean he's greedy or does that mean he wants a bigger boat?
But see, that could just go on and on. You know, this guy get a bigger
boat. I'm asking you, so how big a boat should a man be allowed to buy? Let me ask you, since you say there should be limits on everything. So a man should not be able to buy a boat over what length?
You can buy whatever you want to buy as long as you got $30 million, that's all you can have. Nobody's net worth could be more.
And who should get the rest of it? You should get the rest of it for hearing aid batteries?
No. If you take that money, I'm pretty sure that'll be trillions of dollars that you can pay off the debt that we have.
In other words, you want to steal money from people who earned it and give it to people who didn't earn it. Is that it?
No, it's just eliminating greed. It's the
what makes you assume that any man who has a fortune is greedy? Why do you assume that any man or any woman who earned a great deal of money did it illegally or greedily? What makes you assume that?
It's not really that. It's just hoarding up. It could be food. It could be money. It could be land. It's just the hoarding.
In other words, you believe in the Zimbabwe approach of Mugabe. We should take land away from landowners, too, because they don't need it?
What if
a person owns a house, an apartment, and a country house? If you were the czar, would you take away any of their property?
As long as his net worth is not over $30 million. He can have.
Well, where'd you come up with $30 million? Why $30 million? Why not $31 million? Why not $29 million? How'd you come up with $30 million?
Well, $30 million, I think is a fair amount of money.
All right, we'll see if we can get you out the Medicaid hearing aid batteries any moment. We'll see if we can manipulate the government. Well, as Aristotle Onassis said, if you're going to get raped, you may as well enjoy it. I can't say give him a chance. If we give Obama 100 days, there'll be no America left. I want to remind you that he passed 5 executive orders, which is unprecedented. He has passed, in the Congress at least, the House of Reps, they say 850. Don't believe it. It's probably going to be closer to $2 trillion by the time they get through with you. How in the world can your children pay off this debt? They can't. Well, here's a note of good news in the midst of all of this bad news. This just came out minutes ago. Court says private school can expel lesbians. So apparently we just won one for, let's say, freedom of choice, to use a favorite phrase of the radical left. A private religious school can, C-A-N, expel students it believes are lesbians because the school isn't covered by California civil rights laws, a state appeals court has ruled. Relying on a 1998 state Supreme Court ruling that allowed the Boy Scouts to exclude gays and atheists, the 4th District Court of Appeal in San Bernardino said California Lutheran High School is a social organization entitled to follow its own principles, not a business subject to state anti-discrimination laws. Justice Betty Rickley said in the 3-0 ruling the following: the whole purpose of sending one's child to a religious school is to ensure that he or she learns even secular subjects within a religious framework. Oh, my God. Someone's left in the courts who understands that? She went on. She said, as with the Boy Scouts, the primary function of the school is to instill its values in young people who are told of its policies when they enroll. Now they're going to appeal it to the state Supreme Court, as you well know, is controlled by the gay mafia. But according to this court, he said, if you're a religious school, you can discriminate on any basis you want. That's the lawyer for the lesbian girls. John McKay, a lawyer for California Lutheran, said he was pleased the court recognized that a religious school is not a business, and the purpose of a religious school is to teach Christian values, which I will add do not include homosexual relationships. Let's just add that. The ruling is the first to consider a religious school status under California's UNRRA Civil Rights Act, which forbids discrimination by businesses and was amended in 2005 to include discrimination based on sexual orientation. This is interesting. The lesbian girls were juniors at the high school in Wildomar when the principal, Gregory Bork, summoned them to his office in 2005 and questioned them separately about their sexual orientation and whether they loved each other. The principal acted after another student reported posting on the girls' MySpace pages. Bork suspended the girls based on their answers, and the school's directors expelled them a month later. The girls who later graduated from another high school have not been identified and have not discussed their sexual orientation. Their suit said the school had no right to dismiss them because of its perception they were lesbians. So there it is. The school, the religious school, differs from these institutions because the main reason for its existence is the religious message it seeks to instill in its students. Therefore, those of you who have opted out of the public schools because of the cesspool nature of the teachers and the teachings should rest comfortably understanding that you still have a right to have your children go to a religious school where perversion is not the norm but the exception. There it is, some win for values, family values. Court says private school can expel lesbians. I mean, this is shocking in the state of California. I would have thought that we would have read today that the court says that a religious school must instill lesbian values in all girls and homosexual values in all boys in order to make certain that there's inclusiveness and that there's a diversity of sexual orientation. But no, they said the whole purpose of sending one child to a religious school is to ensure that he or she learns even secular subjects within a religious framework. That's amazing. If you get a comment on this, don't bother me. send your letter to a newspaper. 1-800-449-8255. The big news is the era of gangsterism under Obama and under the administration that we are seeing is a total fraud. Not only has he appointed one lobbyist after another, all within a few days of saying he wouldn't do so, but today he has the audacity of deceit to get up there in front of a smudged fireplace mantle in the West Wing and tell us that he's shocked, just shocked, at the large bonus payments on Wall Street, while sitting next to him is newly minted Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner, who received a severance pay of $435,000 from his old employee, the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. So there it is. It's all hypocrisy all the time. Michael Savage wins the prestigious Braveheart Award. That's up on michaelsavage.com. Wonderful article by my good friend who wrote this article, and you should read it because you won't be able to read it in your local newspaper where they never publish anything but bad news about me, just people who smear me. But if you want to get a balanced opinion, you got to read my website. It says, the latest manifestation of Michael Savage's heroic traits were reported just this week. Savage had sued CAIR, Council on American Islamic Relations. After the suit, the Muslim lobbying group tried to get Savage stuck with their attorney fees. They lost. They tried again and just lost again. In bringing the suit, Savage shone a spotlight on CARE and its supporters, which most Americans had never seen before. He also went up against this group that had bent municipalities to its will, causing laws and its customs to be adopted. Remember the foot baths? Remember the suing the airline because of what happened? She said, Savage gives good advice to us all. Savage said, now people will not be afraid to file suits if they have a legitimate claim against CARE or any other Soros-funded group. And I want to remind you that the last part of that is very important. So you have to read about this, and you have to look at the award and see what it means. She went on to say, it is rare that we see that kind of audacious profession of one's convictions. In the field of social and political commentary, Michael Savage stands out for that reason. He does not back down. He has had extensive education and knows what he thinks. He does not suffer fools gladly, actually does not suffer them at all. Because he is critical of all politicians who are wanting, he is not invited to the White House to be propagandized, since presidents and politicians live there. He is the best-known, unknown talk show host in the country. He is nobody's dummy, nor powerful. He is nobody's dummy for powerful media ventriloquists. Millions tune in every day. Millions tune him in to hear him voice their own frustrations. He is more nearly the common man, the voice of the people, than most in his business. His voice rings true to them. She goes on and says, his independence has cost him at times. When the left attacks, the people who should be supporting him are silent. Thank you for that, Barbara. He is under constant attack by all facets of the left wing. He has done battle with the twits pretending to be a government on the San Francisco Board of Supervisors. He opposed CARE and won again and again, but they won't report it in the local paper. His latest battle in court was decided in his favor just recently, but they won't report it. They will not report it in the local failed Hearst newspaper. Savage knows a bully when he sees one and does not back off, hence the Braveheart Award. She says it is time that the conservatives had their own awards. The left uses them to promote their favorites, and it is something the conservatives can do equally as well, if not better, since we have better raw material. The left, having no real scruples or traditional morals, embraces all who will further the cause. On the other hand, conservatives are independent and do not easily join a group or cause. Is it time to do so? And she goes on, I think this is very interesting. Thank you, Barbara. I really appreciate it for giving me the Braveheart Award. I truly do. Court says private school can expel lesbians. Wow, I can't. I'm shocked. Really, I'm shocked by that. 1-800-449-8255. MichaelSavage.com is the website. I have really great stories up there today. I'm feeling good. I feel that, you know, whatever tenure I have left in radio, and I hope it's a lengthy one, and it's not up to the ratings because they've never been bigger. And thanks to Obama, conservatives and talk radio have never had better hope for their future than now. In fact, Obama just gave a shot in the arm to conservative talk radio by attacking the only opposition he saw, which is Rush Limbaugh, which I found quite encouraging on one hand, and also shocking because Rush has been kind of dormant for the last couple of years. But when attacked, it shows the guy is smart and he can fight. And I have to take my hat off to him. You know, I'll give credit where credit is due. I don't attack people in the media just for fun, nor do I do it out of sour grapes. I do it for a reason, to try to get them to stop behaving a certain way, just as I do with politicians, okay? So when a guy does the right thing, I'm glad. I'm very glad. I'm glad I could say thank you for doing it. But make no mistake about it, it's unprecedented for a president to stand up and attack a talk show host. It shows you that there is no opposition party, and the only opposition party is found in the media itself and only in one small band of the media, which is conservative talk radio. And if you want to live in a new era of gangsterism, then you don't stand up to Obama's hypocrisy, and you'll soon be living in Cuba, because we'll have Cuba right here in America. You have to understand that unless you stand up to hypocrisy, no matter which side of the aisle it may appear in, it's not good for you, it's not good for your children, it's not good for your democracy. Don't you understand that? Don't you understand that it doesn't matter which side of the aisle it comes from, that my outrage right now, while it may be directed at Obama and his hypocrisy, was equally directed at George Bush over the years. Many of you don't remember, but it was I who stopped the appointment of Harriet Myers to the Supreme Court. It was I who stopped the turning over of our port security to the folks in Dubai, the Dubai ports deal. You did it. And I will tell you right now, it was not Rush, it was me. I take full credit for stopping amnesty for illegal aliens. It was me and my audience that stopped the amnesty for illegal aliens, incidentally. So it was all under Bush, and I opposed those policies right here on the Savage Nation over the years, just as I now oppose the hypocrisy that I see. And thus far, although people may say, I don't like what you're saying, I don't like that you're not giving him a chance, they haven't really refuted anything that I've said. The man spent $150 million on a coronation. His followers or worshippers trashed the National Mall and made it look like they trashed it. Let's leave it at that. It's going to take $21 million to repair the damage done by the mobs that attended his coronation. They're not showing you that on CNN or any other networks because they don't want you to see the kind of damage done by the worshipers. They trashed it. It looked like Woodstock. In fact, I'm the first but not the last to tell you that it's quite symbolic that what Obama's hippies, the hippie followers of Obama, did to the National Mall is almost exactly what happened up in Woodstock after the Woodstock in 1967, when the hippie druggies went there and trashed the farm. It took a long time for the earth to recover from the trashing that it got from the hippies at Woodstock. And it's quite a good analogy to tell you that the same hippies, albeit most of them were older now, trashed the National Mall. And the same hippies who trashed Woodstock and the National Mall, who are now inside the White House. And make no mistake about it, Obama is running a sort of hippie administration. I mean, I'm using an old phrase, but it's quite symbolic. He's sort of, the media is glorifying that he's not uptight like Bush. They're glorifying that he appears without a jacket. They're glorifying that he shows up late for work, that he's not on time and punctual like the uptight white man, George Bush. Somehow that it's cooler, that he's more like a laid back, cool guy. In other words, we have a hippie administration. William Ayers and things of that nature, they're all in the background. And so although we have a hippie administration, doesn't mean that we have to like them. It means there are many of us who understand hippies very well because we once were hippies. I was once a hippie. I told you that. I'm not denying it. But everybody grows up if they're a man. You know, there are phases to development. There are phases in whether you be a moth or whether you be a man. Now, many of you are still in the pupae of liberalism. You don't understand that you can stay in the larvae of liberalism all your life, or you can develop into a full-grown whatever you become. You go from larvae to caterpillar, if you wish, or you could remain a larvae, or you could become a pupae, or you could become a moth. But you're still not a fully developed organism. Many of you are still stuck. People say to me, Michael Savage is a hypocrite because I knew him 30 years ago and he was quite liberal. Well, so what? What does that matter? I developed. I'm no longer in the larvae of liberalism. I've developed into a full man. I understand the damage that liberals are doing to this country and have been doing to the world. And I am standing here as a bellwether, as a, to use a nautical phrase, my studio is surrounded by nautical items, and I love boating, and I love everything to do with the boating world. Lighthouse in the dark. lighthouse preventing America from crashing into the rocks totally. I am Lynkeus, pilot seer of the Argonauts. I am on the highest mast of the good ship America, and I am telling you, we have a hippie as a captain, and I'll be right back.
Savage.
Isn't freedom great? Isn't freedom of speech wonderful? And the more angry they get, the more right I know I am. That's why the chinless wonders of San Francisco are so incensed. This is reinvigorated talk radio to have such a hypocrite in the White House. When you have, honest to God, you know, I'm not doing it for effect. By all evidence, if you look at the National Mall and the way it was trashed, I forget the name of the farm in Woodstock. They trashed the National Mall the same way they trashed that guy's farm up in the Catskill Mountains. And now that they're inside the White House as well as outside the White House, they burnt the mantle in the West Wing. I mean, I looked at it. I guarantee you by tomorrow it's painted. I can guarantee you they'll get someone from Acorn over there probably as I'm speaking to paint up the mantle. But okay. But I saw it. It could be captured. The mantle was burned while Obama was giving the speech about how shocked he was about the large bonuses on Wall Street while sitting next to a man who just received a large bonus who's now running the Treasury Secretary. It is good to see things. It is good to say the king has no clothes. It is very therapeutic for you as well as for me. Elijah in Monterey, California, welcome to the program. You're on the air. What's on your mind?
Mr. Savage, I just wanted to comment on your award you won, and I believe how justified it was. And you oftentimes mention that you have a fairly wide and ultimately big listenership. And even I live in Santa Cruz, California, which is, as far as I know, the most liberal town in America, with maybe the exception of San Francisco. And I just wanted
Has Santa Cruz yet legalized sex with animals? Is it permissible to marry a donkey there yet?
Not to my knowledge, but...
Oh, well, they're not quite as progressive as they might be in Amenclaw, Washington. But what's the purpose of the call, Elijah?
Well, I just want to comment, even in this liberal town, oftentimes people with very different ideologies will tell me that they oftentimes listen to your show just because... you're very varied as far as talk radio goes.
Well, that's right. I'm very varied, and many of them are educated as I am, and they understand that I know what I'm talking about. And there's a part of them that understands that they may be wrong, and they have nowhere to go to hear an opposing opinion, and they understand the only way to arrive at the truth is through the didactics of opposition. And I appreciate the call. I'm not giving anyone a free book today. Speaking of Santa Cruz in that area, I wish I had more time. I was watching Food Network last night. And it was a cook-off on how cioppino is made. Now, for those of you who don't live on in the West Coast, bouillabaisse is what they call it in France. But in the West Coast, they call it cioppino. There was a wonderful old Sicilian guy named Phil. I think it was Phil's cioppino house down in Moss Landing. I tell you, I wanted to go down there. And this guy, he started, his grandparents were Sicilian fishermen, as many of my acquaintances and friends in San Francisco's grandparents were. They were Sicilian fishermen. Now they own restaurants. It was unbelievable to watch him prepare a cioppino and see how well he did it compared to the stooge from the cooking show who destroyed. I wouldn't eat what the guy made from the Food Network. He was putting like a pound of butter in an anchovies to make it taste good. I could puke from the kind of stuff the Food Network guy was making while I was salivating watching this old guy make cioppino. But the funniest part was, I think his name was Phil. I have to go down there and try it. He says, you put in this, you put in that. And cioppino contains whatever the fisherman caught that day. He says, I don't know whether he was pulling the audience's leg, but he says, the way the name cioppino came up is like this, he said. He said, in the old days, the fishermen were poor. One guy would fish for clams, the other for mussels, the other for salmon, the other for striped bass, the other for lobster or crabs. And he said, well, what do you got? He says, well, I got crabs. Put it in. What do you got? I got clams. He says, chip it in. What do you got there? He says, I got some sea bass. Chip it in. He says, they didn't know what to say. So they called cioppino. Chip it in, though. I laughed hysterically. I finally saw somebody on a cooking show who made something that I didn't want to barf from. And guess what? His name was Phil, I think, from Moss Landing, California. An old Sicilian dude who really knows food as opposed to the phony who was the star of the show, who I wouldn't eat that food. I wouldn't give it to a camel. in a zoo. I'll tell you the truth, because I don't think a camel from a zoo would eat it. This has been fun. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
This is the Savage Nation. Let's review what I've been talking about today on this program. The biggest deal is the Senate and the so-called stimulus, which is really nothing but a pork barrel spending project unlike any ever seen in the history of America. The same people who bankrupted America are now rewarding themselves with pork beyond comprehension. And this, to think of it, from Obama, the man who said he would have the most open administration in history without any so-called earmarks. Well, as you well know, liar, liar, pants on fire. What's the worst pork you've heard of in the stimulus bill? The STD treatments, the biomass batteries, the NEA grants for Dancing with the Sluts. Another topic, and a big one, is the appointment of Geithner the Grifter. We all know that Geithner, now our Treasury Secretary and the head of the IRS, is a designated tax cheater. In the last 24 hours, we found out he got a huge severance package from his last job, over $500,000 from a government job, and he hired a Goldman Sachs lobbyist as his second in command at the Treasury Department. How is this going on? How could this be permitted? Answer, Obama the Magnificent. And of course, the trial of Rod Blagojevich. It took place in Illinois today, and to me, Blagojevich is the symbol of a new corrupt era. I don't know whether it's the end or the beginning of a new corrupt era of American gangsterism in politics. I don't know whether he represents the end of it or whether it is the beginning of it. Who ushered in this corruption? I don't know. Was it the Bush administration? Is Obama changing it? Well, I don't know. There's no openness here. There's nothing but lobbyists there. So I think it's business as usual here. Have you noticed Obama's curious style of communication? Strange walk, strange speech pattern. Who does he think he's imitating? But why are we so surprised at what Obama's doing? Another day, another stimulus package. I can't say that I'm excited over the fact of possible trillions of dollars of debt to be put up in order to stimulate the economy. We could be talking about decades to dig out from under this debt alone. Ben Lieberman is a senior analyst in energy and the environment at the Heritage Foundation. He's joining us now for a report on why he thinks this is the wrong type of stimulus.
Well, thank you, Michael. Well, there's plenty of reason to believe that the proposed stimulus package won't work, but I'm particularly worried by the environmental provisions in the bill, the so-called green stimulus measures like renewable energy and public transportation and other things. Now, the reason the overall stimulus is a bad idea is because every dollar the government injects into the economy must first be taxed or borrowed out of the economy. So rather than creating new purchasing power, we are simply redistributing existing purchasing power. And it's worse than a zero-sum game because, as we all know, when the government spends money, it does so on things less likely to create economic growth and jobs than if the money had been left in the private sector. And this misallocation of resources is only worsened with the attempt to fashion a green stimulus because projects deemed environmentally acceptable tend to be ones that are especially questionable from an environmental, or I should say from an economic standpoint. Before I get into the specifics, I should make the overall point that a green stimulus is a contradiction in terms because the environmental movement is, by design, an anti-stimulus package. After all, these are the activists who regularly fight to stop new factories and power plants and construction projects. For them, environmental objections almost always trump economic concerns, and it's rare for them to be lacking in an excuse to oppose a given project. In fact, the environmental movement's many successes has for years been a drag on the economy and a net job killer, especially for high-wage blue-collar jobs in such things as manufacturing and energy production. Now, sure, there are a few things politically correct enough that environmentalists approve of them, like renewable energy, public transportation, and energy efficiency programs. And these items will comprise the green stimulus. But these items are puny compared to the things environmentalists still oppose, like virtually all heavy industry and anything to do with the fossil fuels that provide 85% of America's energy. So to the extent that the new administration and Congress try to go green, they'll be embarking on a net anti-stimulus package and a net job killer. Now, a big part of the stimulus package involves money for renewables like wind and solar and biofuels. I think this would backfire and hurt the economy. Keep in mind that affordable energy is critical to the economic recovery and to post-recovery growth. But these renewables are more expensive than their conventional counterparts, which is why they need all these federal handouts to compete in the first place. The fact that they can't survive without the corporate welfare and the stimulus package is a sign that they're too expensive. So, for example, I believe that subsidies for wind and solar energies are net job killers. Sure, from the narrow perspective of the wind and solar energies, jobs are created as these systems are manufactured and installed. But the tax dollars needed to prop them up cost jobs elsewhere, as does the expensive electricity they produce. The only reason to even consider renewables is for their environmental benefits, which are questionable in most cases. But the economic argument for foisting more expensive energy on the public falls completely flat. Another problem with the green stimulus is that many of the ideas are very old and stale. Things like public transportation and energy efficiency programs have been accorded politically correct status and have been the favorites of Washington spenders for decades. For example, many public transportation systems have enjoyed massive subsidies for decades, and programs mandating energy-efficient appliances and tax credits for insulation and fuel economy standards for vehicles, these have all been around for decades. The track record for this stuff is very mixed, but in any event, the likelihood that there are very many worthwhile projects that have somehow evaded the billions already spent, I think is very unlikely. A better stimulus package, from my view, rather than having the government spending money on green projects, involves the government removing the impediments to private sector investment. For example, if we remove the restrictions on domestic oil and natural gas drilling, that could create hundreds of thousands of jobs. And unlike the renewable expenditures in the stimulus package, these jobs would be funded entirely by the private sector. And the oil and gas produced would help lower prices, which is the exact opposite of what happens when the government subsidizes uneconomic alternative energy sources. So rather than a green stimulus, we would all be better off with fewer environmental restrictions, which would allow for more private sector economic activity. Thank you, and now back to Michael.
It seems that we would have learned this from past experiences. This just proves the old adage about those who don't learn from history are condemned to repeat it. Hopefully they will learn before it's too late, but I kind of doubt it. Where this ends, nobody knows. This is the Savage Nation. Be here or be nowhere.
Savage.
We see the inexperience of our new president increasingly each day. His nomination for various cabinet positions have left many of us baffled by his choices. One of these choices is Tim Geithner. He went from tax evader to head tax collector in one fell swoop. Ken Timmerman has been keeping his eye on this nightmare and joins us now with a report.
Well, Michael, the news is now in. It's official. Timothy Geithner, as of Monday night, has been confirmed and sworn in as our next Secretary of the Treasury. Here's a man who is going to be in charge of the trillion-dollar bailout of the U.S. economy, and also in charge of the IRS, the chief tax collector of the United States, who is an admitted tax cheat. It's really an extraordinary situation. And I must say, the one thing that I find a little bit unfortunate about this is a missed political opportunity for the Republican minority in the U.S. Senate. The vote was actually a lot closer than some people thought it was going to be. The floor vote on the Senate was 60 in favor and 34 against. With the 34 against, there were 30 Republicans, just 30 Republicans, but in addition, three Democrats and one independent, the socialist senator from the state of Vermont, Bernie Sanders. But 10 Republicans actually voted to confirm this self-avowed tax cheat to become our chief tax collector. That's what I find extraordinary. Now, Mitch McConnell, who's the minority leader, he's a Republican senator from Kentucky. McConnell voted against Geithner, but he was not able, for reasons which I think are hard to understand at this point, he was not able to get the Republican caucus to vote as a block against Geithner's confirmation. So you have people like Senator Shelby from Alabama, who is the ranking Republican on the Finance Committee. You've got people like Olympia Snow in Maine or Crapo of Idaho, Ensign and Gregg of New Hampshire, Voinovich, Lindsey Graham, John McCain's best friend, voting for Timothy Geithner. John McCain voted against him. You have Senator Corker and Senator Cornyn, who are both very staunch conservatives. Corker's from Tennessee and Cornyn's from Texas. They voted in favor of the Geithner confirmation, and his biggest supporter among the Republicans was Orrin Hatch. Now, I think that this was a missed opportunity, because had those 10 Republicans voted with the others against Geithner's nomination, you could very easily have had a close to tie vote, and it would not have succeeded through a filibuster. So here was a missed opportunity, and instead we have a self-avowed tax cheat as the top tax collector in the United States. Now, you know, the argument that people like Orrin Hatch used to garner support for Tim Geithner was that he was absolutely essential for the continued functioning of the United States economy. This one man was so important that if the Senate did not confirm him, it would be the end of the world. That's what they were actually saying. Now, this is extraordinary in itself. Here you have Tim Geithner, a man who was the president of the Federal Reserve Bank in New York, who during his confirmation hearing told Senator Feinstein of California that he was most proud, of his efforts to set up a system for trading credit default swaps. These are, this was a huge $46 trillion unregulated market that many people believe was manipulated by George Soros, and that because of Soros' manipulation led to the crash of the markets. Here's a man who was deeply involved in setting up the mechanisms for creating an unregulated market that could be manipulated so easily. And he says that was his life work, his life's work, and the thing, the accomplishment that he's most proud of. Frankly, I think that ought to be the accomplishment he is most ashamed of and should be possibly prosecuted for, because it's clear that the credit default swap market was, you know, which involved all these derivatives from the mortgage, from bad mortgages and the rest of it, it was, there were no protections in place, and it was a vulnerability of our financial system that could be targeted by hostile forces. And by the way, George Soros pointed this out in an interview that he gave to an Australian newspaper back in April. And he said there's this huge unregulated market, $46 trillion, as big as the U.S. share market, with no safeguards, no regulations whatsoever. And speculators could come in with very little capital and essentially undermine it and break the bank. Well, that's in fact exactly what happened in September. Now, Tim Geithner, the man who helped create that market, is now in charge of the U.S. economy for the Obama administration. I think, frankly, that's scary. We've heard a lot of voices, Michael, that the U.S. income tax system is so complicated that anybody can make mistakes, and Geithner's errors were just minor misjudgments, or he was too busy, he was too harried, he, you know, didn't have time. Look, this is a man who used tax software, TurboTax, just as you or I can buy on the market to do his taxes. It asks you the questions about what your income is, and it points out your tax obligations. He was working for the International Monetary Fund in Washington for 4 years. He was even audited for two of those years by the IRS in 2006. They audited him for tax years 2003 and 2004. They found the money that he should have reported, that he should have paid self-employment taxes on. They made him pay those taxes then with interest payments, but they didn't look at the earlier 2 years, 2001 and 2002. So you've got now Geithner in 2006, he's audited, he pays 2 years of the back's taxes, but he says, oh, IRS didn't find those other 2 years, 2001, 2002, so I guess I'm off scot-free. And he didn't pay them. He didn't pay the money for the earlier years until he was called by the Obama people, the transition team, and told, you know, that, look, we're considering you for Treasury Secretary. Is there anything you've got to clean up? And so he went back and cleaned this up in December. That's what I think has really angered people on the Senate Finance Committee and elsewhere, and I think really all across America. Here's a man who only paid his back taxes because he got caught and he was going to be put in a position of responsibility and it would become embarrassing. This is Ken Timmerman in Washington. Thanks, Michael.
Well, unfortunately, it looks like this is the type of person who is going to be running the government for the next 4 years. What a change and what hope. Oh, but moving on.
I'm never going to go on a vacation again, or very seldom will I ever go. I don't enjoy it. Now, if I had a house, let's say, in a tropical setting that I would go to, that's another story. But I don't right now have one, and I don't want to buy one. I don't want to maintain another property anywhere ever again. I don't want to maintain anything ever anywhere. It's too much. Jerry on WOR, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, Dr. Savage, just want to tell you, I totally agree with you. You know, when I take off for vacation, it's just, there's no place I'd rather be than my house or, you know, like at my in-law's shore house about 50 miles away.
When you go on vacation, don't you feel obligated to go on a vacation? You don't really want to go?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I just want to be with my wife and kids and hang out at home and just relax. I mean, you know, I'll do little things with them here and there, like I said, at the beach, but I don't want to go overseas with them, and it's just, you don't relax.
Let's say you go to Florida, whatever, in the winter from New York. So even if you got another room for the children, I don't know how old they are. Let's say you and your wife are in one and they're in another. Then you're worried about them all the time, and then you got to entertain the children all the time. And let me tell you something else, Jerry. How old are your kids?
5, 3, and 9 months. All girls.
All right, they're babies. Wait till your children are 12 to 14 and they are still traveling with you because you cannot leave them at home. You will be sitting at dinner with them, and what you have is the equivalent of having taken an adult couple on vacation. You're paying all the bills. They don't talk to you. They're hostile all of the time, and you don't enjoy one second of it, and they don't either. But it's like an enforced vacation. The kids don't want to be there, and you're forced paying their tab. And you don't want them to be there. They don't enjoy themselves. They want to go to, like, silly things with you. Anyway, I'm against vacations. If you like it, fine. I can vacate in my own living room better than anywhere.
Savage.
Years now, George Soros has been trying to take over the political machinery of the United States of America. He invested a big amount of money to impeach George Bush. Well, he now appears to have been successful. It seems that he's elected Obama. He has the ear of Barack Obama. At the very least, he has the ear of Barack Obama. And today in an article he wrote, in order to prevent the U.S. economy from sliding into a depression, Obama must implement a radical and comprehensive set of policies. This puppet master is about to execute his most skillful maneuver and place the United States as well as the rest of the world under his leftist, dictatorial, monetary dictatorship. Now, remember who George Soros is. This is not just a benign investor. In 1992, Soros sold short, forcing the Bank of England to withdraw its currency from the European exchange rate mechanism. He almost broke the Bank of England. In 1997, Soros destroyed the Malaysian economy. He has been convicted of insider trading in Europe. He has given millions of dollars to liberal causes in the United States. MoveOn.org, America Coming Together, Center for American Progress, and we believe to CAIR, the group that has been trying to destroy Michael Savage. Soros failed to get his puppet John Kerry in office in 2004, but with Obama, he apparently has succeeded. And if you liberals think his law-breaking and currency manipulations are just fine,
because he happens to espouse liberal views, then you're ignorant. Because in 06, he bought about 2 million shares of Halliburton. Soros is not about liberalism as much as the quest for pure unmitigated profit and power. And now he's saying Obama must take drastic action to restore the economy. He says today the American consumer can no longer act as the so-called motor of the global economy. Well, what are we then, the muffler? He is kicking America when it's down, and he is ready to put America in the shackles of a socialist dictatorship just so long as he can make a buck. Look out for the money changers in the back of the temple of democracy. Well, what more is there to be said? One of the chief reasons we're in this financial meltdown is greed. Lenders, investors, bankers were all able to bend the rules for years and years and years without any fear of punishment under the Bush. Now billions and billions of our tax dollars are being used by Obama to try and keep these thieving and corrupt afloat. This corruption is not limited to mortgages and investments. It seems the student loan industry may be in need of a wake-up call as well. Joining us today is Alan Colling, who has just written a book on this subject entitled The Student Loan Scam. Alan, welcome to the Savage Nation.
It's good to be with you, Michael.
What was your reason for writing this book?
I found myself, after graduation, I was a scientist at Caltech, and after leaving Caltech, I found myself underemployed for a short amount of time, and I had contacted my lender and requested what's known as a forbearance, where you can suspend your payments for a short period of time. Well, instead of granting my request, they instead put my loans into what's known as default status. So my $38,000 in original loans very quickly escalated to over $100,000 with penalties, fees, and interest. And so I decided to take this on as a research topic, and the results I had were compelling enough to land me on 60 Minutes and in Fortune magazine. So despite my best efforts to remain a private citizen, I've become sort of a political activist on the topic.
How is the student loan system a problem?
The student loan system has arisen from, Washington, D.C. It was a creature of Washington, big government, where the government decided to guarantee student loans for the student loan industry. And unfortunately, along with guaranteeing these loans, they took away the most basic standard consumer protections that you can imagine. So it's become a predatory loan instrument where, in fact, it's in the financial interest of not only the lenders, but also the guarantors, the collection companies, and even the federal government when students fall behind on their debts rather than their loans remaining in good stead. And so it's set up a lot of people. In fact, 30% of student loan borrowers actually end up defaulting on their loans, and these people end up being on the hook for, double, triple, quadruple, or even more than they originally borrowed. And this is all without the benefit of, any standard protections that we take for granted with every other type of loan. So there's no bankruptcy protections, there's no statute of limitations, and in fact, there's no truth in lending requirements that the lenders have to abide by. And on top of that, there's some very draconian collection tools that are afforded to the student loan industry, and only to the student loan industry, for the collection of this vastly inflated debt. So people can get their wages and their tax returns garnished. They can get their Social Security disability income taken away, all without a court order. So it's become a very predatory debt instrument by design, and this is state-sanctioned, and it really has to end.
How did the problem start?
Well, it started back in 1972 with the creation of Sallie Mae by the federal government, where Sallie Mae would become this repurchaser of student loans. This was this was in order to convince the banks to make loans to students who were a bad credit risk. And so this was the beginning of it. But over the past 30 years, the standard consumer protections that we take for granted with every other type of loan, federally guaranteed or not, were chiseled away to the point where in 1998, bankruptcy protections, statutes of limitations had been basically erased for student loans. And, this, as I said, set up a very predatory lending environment. But not only that, it caused directly a massive inflation within colleges and universities. So if you go back to 1970s, every year since 1970, the price of college has risen at about double the rate of inflation. So it's gotten to the point today where the average undergraduate student borrower leaves school with $23,000 in student loans. That doesn't include credit card debt or any other debt that they might carry to get them through college. And for graduate students, the average debt is about $42,000. And so these are very large, very real, very big numbers. And the fact that all these consumer protections are now gone is leading to some very horrendous personal tragic stories throughout the country. You know, at studentloanjustice.org, the website that I founded in 2005, we're getting stories in now of people who have quite literally fled the country. In fact, we've got about three dozen stories of people who have left the country as a result of their student loans. We've got stories of from family members of people who have committed suicide, you know, and in general, people who have quite simply been forced off the grid, not because of any criminal wrongdoing, but rather because of their student loans.
Why do you say this may hurt our already damaged economy?
Well, there is a very large or very, very good analogy to be drawn between what's happening in the home mortgage industry and what is has actually been happening in the student loan industry for many years. You know, lack of government oversight, a chiseling away of consumer protections, although it's been far more dramatic with student loans, has led to very cavalier and very irresponsible corporate lending. And as a result, you know, like in the home mortgage industry, we've seen a very large inflation so that the loans are getting bigger and bigger. And, you know, just like what happened in the home mortgage industry, so too is this bound to happen. In fact, it's already happening in the student loan industry. The most recent forecast I have found is that about 30%, that's one in three of student loan borrowers, will end up defaulting on their loan. Although, unlike the home mortgage industry, with the student loan industry, there are no bankruptcy protections. So where a defaulted home mortgage borrower can, you know, give the house back and get a fresh start, you know, start from scratch, this is not the case for student loan borrowers. For student loan borrowers, they are on the hook for every penny of principal plus another probably 100% or more in penalties, fees, and capitalized interest upon those penalties and fees. So with regards to student loans, I'd say the problem is far worse than the problem with home mortgages.
You're seeing bailout money already going to these lending companies?
Oh, absolutely. Sallie Mae was, in fact, was one of the first non-home mortgage companies, banks out there with their hands out for a bailout. And in fact, the Secretary of Treasury Paulson has designed a consumer lending bailout program for companies, student loan companies, just like Sallie Mae. So Sallie Mae will indeed participate in this bailout. They will be given loans against private loans, private student loans that they have made by the federal government.
What do you see happening now that more people are becoming aware of this problem?
Well, at this point, the people are finally beginning to coalesce around this issue on, you know, my website and other areas, Facebook and MySpace and so on. But I think it's going to be probably 6 months or so before we really have a cohesive voice. And, you know, I really couldn't speak for Congress, but I would hope that there will be some legislation that provides at least some fairness to the consumers of these horrible student loans in the next year or so.
Well, what do you hope people will learn from your book?
Well, my hope is that people will finally, for once, stand up and talk to their congresspeople, talk to their elected representatives, and force, at the minimum, a return of the most basic standard consumer protections that were taken away from student loans. And, you know, quite frankly, I just hope that it starts a national debate. You know, we've heard people such as Ron Paul call for, you know, the abolition of the Department of Education. And, you know, I can't say that he's wrong in regards to the student loan program. I'm not speaking to any other issues that the department deals with, but they have so badly bungled and mishandled the student loan issue that, I mean, something absolutely has got to be done. But at the minimum, standard consumer protections have got to be returned to student loans. the people out there who are in distress over their student loans will realize that they aren't alone, and that a good first step to take would be to come to studentloanjustice.org and tell their story for the record and get with their state chapter so that we can finally get something moving on this and rein in the power of big government.
Alan Collins, thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
Thank you very much, and I appreciate your time, Dr. Savage.
This is the Savage Nation. Be here or be nowhere.
Savage.
You don't realize the beauty of radio. Here's the beauty of radio. Here is that why it's the entertainer's dream. This is the greatest medium for a great entertainer who is shy. Now, listen to what I just said to you. No one's ever said this in the history of entertainment, ever. This is brand new stuff. I've gone down into a whole new realm of reality here. I have an entertainer's personality. I have since I'm a child. I controlled it. I worked with it, highly educated, blah, blah, blah. But fundamentally, I've always enjoyed entertaining people for many different reasons, and I won't go into it right now. However, live performances are extremely demanding. You ask anyone who does them what it takes out of people. They come off drained and it really wrecks them in some ways. Yeah, you get the energy of the crowd. But getting up in front of people is really amazing. So now, listen to where I'm going. Let's say the numbers say that I have 8 to 10 million listeners a week. It's probably closer to 20 million on and off. But let's take the actual numbers of 8 to 10 million. That means that any 15-minute spread, there's 800,000 people listening to the show somewhere on the 300 or so stations that this radio show, The Savage Nation, has heard. 800,000 or so people every 15 minutes come in and out of the tent, so to speak. Now, can you imagine getting up in front of an audience of 800,000 people and trying to perform as naturally as I do? It's impossible. Do you understand what I'm saying? That's the beauty of electronic performance, whether it be, it has to be radio. Because television actually gives you that feeling of the millions, the tens of millions of people, which is why so many of them are so homogenized, pasteurized, sanitized, pressurized, etc. And it's why many of us don't listen to the news anymore, because we know they're doing it because they've been homogenized. Rather, they're doing a homogenized newscast that offends as few people as possible. Consequently, it's not worth listening to. Why listen to something that isn't truthful? Radio, on the other hand, is an intimate medium because the broadcaster, the performer in this case, is fundamentally in his own mind, in his own world, in his own room, in his own studio. So he doesn't even understand who he is reaching. He has no concept that he's talking to millions of people. He actually thinks he's talking to a couple of people, a small audience. Therefore, it's like an intimate performance inside a small nightclub. At its best, that's what radio ought to be. And that's what I do, is I project into a small audience in a small nightclub, which is why it seems so personal to you. Do you understand the difference between this show and some others? And I'm not knocking other shows directly, just indirect. Okay, moving on. You know, the fundamental rules of our society seem to be breaking down. In the financial world, the Wall Street frauds broke all the rules, paid off all the regulators, built billions and billions for investors who are only slightly less greedy than they were, and as a result, they seem to have succeeded in destroying the U.S. economy at the same time. In the political world, Rod Blagojevich ignored rules of a different sort. He threatened to cut off funding to a children's hospital if they didn't give him political contributions. He violated federal law by importing untested Canadian drugs into the country, apparently to pay off his pharmaceutical-addicted voter base. He attempted to sell off the United States Senate seat to the highest bidder. A seat, by the way, that once belonged to the current president of the United States, to show you what we are talking about. And remember, Chicago is the home of Al Capone. And he's not the only lawbreaker in the political world. The new Treasury Secretary, Timothy Geithner, didn't see fit to pay his taxes until he was nominated for the position he currently holds. Our current Attorney General, Eric Holder, worked with Bill Clinton to let millionaire lawbreaker and Clinton campaign contributor Mark Rich go free. So it's a new era in Washington, D.C., just like the new era we've seen on Wall Street. It's a new era of criminality, a new era of corruption, a new era of financial disaster. And the worst part of it is our leaders are unwilling to do anything about it or are actively in on the graft themselves. For example, when Sicily was dominated by the mafia an anti-corruption machine established to take on the mafia. Where is our anti-corruption machine in America? Where are they? During the Prohibition era of the 1920s, there were corrupt leaders, paid-off officials, and gangsters of the lowest order, just as there are today. But remember, in that era, at least there was an Elliot Ness. At least there were the untouchables. In this day and age, in this era, all of our leaders seem to be touchable. Okay, let's see what's on michaelsavage.com. The big story is, well, me. Michael Savage has won the prestigious Braveheart Award. Now, you'll have to read the article in order to understand why I have finally won the Braveheart Award and what it is. Great article by Barbara Anderson. You're going to want to print it, and you're going to want to save it, and you're going to want to send it to your friends, because you're not going to read about it anywhere else except on michaelsavage.com. You're not going to read about it on Drudge. You're not going to read about it on Breitbart. You're not going to see it on Fox, CNN, ABC, CBS, LS, MFT, MSLGBT. It won't be there. It'll only be here. Our own little network, the Savage Nation. Did you know that the new bank bailout could cost $2 trillion? That's right. That's just for the banks. Your children's children's children will not be able to pay off the debt itself. This is Obama's idea of hope. Well, he was selling hope. He meant that he hoped you were stupid enough to elect them. Obama letter to Iran assures that the U.S. won't topple the Islamic regime. Isn't that great? The Hitler of Iran gets a pass from Obama, who, by the way, has just discovered he has Muslim roots. During the presidential campaign, Barack Obama's handlers vigorously pointed out his Christian faith. Whenever the misconception arose he may be Muslim, they attacked anyone who said that he was actually raised in a madrasas. Well, they were lying, of course. That's what they meant by hope. They were hoping you were a big enough moron not to understand reality. The handlers also roundly denounced any conservative commentator who might mention his Arabic middle name, Hussein, which, by the way, he used during the swearing-in ceremony. They charged that men like me was engaged in fear-mongering. Once elected, however, Obama personally insisted on his middle name being spoken at his swearing-in ceremony. And now, of course, in a gesture to the Muslim world, he granted the first sit-down interview of his presidency, not to an American network, but to Jihad Television. To Jihad Television, in order to sell himself to the Arab world. And he said on it, "I have Muslim members of my family. I have lived in Muslim countries." That's what he told Al Arabiya Jihad TV, which is based in Dubai. There it is. That's what you got for your change. There was your hope. It was Rahm Emanuel and his handlers hoping that you were big enough morons to elect Obama the Magnificent. This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.